Richard Marinick is nobody's idea of a pretty boy. However, he was a boyo. That's South Boston slang for a foot soldier for organized crime. Mr. Marinick used to hammer kneecaps and rob banks. He went to prison, serving 10 years for armed robbery from the age of 35. But today, in his early 50s, Richard Marinick has become a novelist. His book, Boyos, is a portrait of young thugs and old goons settling scores in Southie, as the neighborhood is called. We sat down with Mr. Marinick at a diner just half a block down the street from a bar where the famous Boston crime boss James Whitey Bulger had his headquarters on the second floor.
In the basement, he had a butcher shop, which he didn't hesitate to use. More than a few people allegedly carried out the back door of his establishment up into the alley and into a waiting car.
This is going to sound incredibly naive, but when you say he had a butcher shop down there, you don't mean that he was selling bologna.
He wasn't selling meat. On record, at least one individual was murdered in that basement, and I heard rumors that there's probably more than one that was murdered in that basement.
And now it's like a restaurant?
Now it's a yuppie bar, cafe lattes and professional people sitting around talking about the old days.
Reading your book, I think some people would conclude that the line between a young man in South Boston who goes into law enforcement and a young man in South Boston who goes into one of the criminal gangs is a very slender line indeed.
I think so too, yeah, I agree with you. The majority of the South Boston citizens were just hardworking, blue-collar, working-class people, predominantly Irish. We had a large Lithuanian population here, a large Polish population, a small Italian population. And then you had your politicians, you had your lawyers, and you had your police officers. I mean, you had families where one individual might be a gangster and his brother might be a police commissioner or a deputy superintendent. That's what Southie is like. I mean, look at Bulger. Damn. Bulger was the biggest gangster and his brother was the Senate president. And you had a lot of that in South Boston.
Whitey Bulger has been at large for 10 years now. He's wanted for 19 murders, racketeering, and extortion charges. His brother William Bulger was indeed the Massachusetts State Senate president. Richard Marinick used to collect debts for Whitey Bulger, but he didn't consider him what you'd call a close friend.
He's got blue eyes, but I mean, they grow almost black. I mean, this guy had a way of looking at an individual and a way of projecting his aura upon you. And a lot of my friends will say the same thing. You're talking to Satan when you're talking to Jimmy. And that's what it was.
Whitey Bulger seems the obvious inspiration for a mobster named Marty Fallon that Richard Marinick has put at the center of Boyos, he writes.
Marty Fallon was to South Boston what a canker sore was to a mouth. Everything had to get by it before it got to a place where it would do any good. He was one of those guys, that rare breed, that when people mentioned his name, they'd automatically lower their voices and mentally make the sign of the cross. Little move through South Boston without Marty tearing off a piece. A Fallon tax, he called it.
The way Richard Marinick tells the story, and the way he tells the stories of other boyos in his novel, crime was a conspicuous career option in South Boston, like becoming a lobsterman in Gloucester.
Absolutely. I think when I was about 19 years old, I started hanging around, working in nightclubs. I worked on the old Boston's Combat Zone, which was a huge strip club district. And I rubbed shoulders with a lot of wise guys. I mean, these are organized crime figures, and I'm a 19-year-old kid, and I'm looking at these guys in the mid-20s wearing these $500 suits and beautiful girls and lots of cash, and they took a liking to me. And from there, I started hanging around with them in Southie when I was about 20 years old, 21, and we all boxed in the same boxing club. It was called the Muni, which is attached to the South Boston District Court. Mm-hmm. So you had all these up-and-coming low-level organized crime guys boxing in a gym that was attached to the courthouse. It was kind of comical, you know. Periodically, you'd have a truck pull up in front of the courthouse, and someone say, leather coats. Run into the gym and say, leather jackets. And we'd all run out, and there'd be a truckload of hot jackets. So someone would run and say, sneakers. And you'd run out, and you'd take your pick of sneakers. And around Christmas time, toys, we got hot toys. And you'd run out, and there'd be a tractor trailer of hot toys, and you'd take your pick for the kids that you knew, you know. It was a funny world, and I liked it. I enjoyed being around these guys.
What a warm holiday story.
It was a great spirit, too. Yeah.
Richard Marinick first put his street smarts to use as a state trooper. One night he had to retrieve a driver's head from the side of the road after an auto wreck.
I did my job as a trooper. I get back to the barracks that night, and I'm hosing this individual's brains and blood off my raincoat in the garage. And I was thinking to myself, it wasn't because of the gore. I was just saying, I don't need this. The brains are on the floor. The blood's running off my raincoat. $157.80 a week. I can't do this anymore. So I quit.
Richard Marinick went back to South Boston, where friends said they could use a man of his talents in the debt collection business.
I used to run around with a ball peen hammer, and I had a little loop sewn inside my jacket, and I had the thing hanging inside the coat.
Now, you didn't carry around a ball peen hammer in case somebody needed help putting their coffee table
together. No, it wasn't for nails. It was to convince people to pay what they ought to. And it worked. Sometimes you just take the hammer out and start polishing the top.
People, they kind of knew what you meant.
Yeah, they get the message, you know.
As you set it up in Boyo's, you get the impression that these are not people who are in a life of crime because they're one step from starvation, but they want dazzle and flash in their life. It's fun and exciting, and you get money in your pocket.
Absolutely. I mean, a lot of these guys, and myself included at the time, all I had was a high school education. Mm-hmm. I mean, where are you going to make $150,000 a year take-home? People fear you, basically, so they expect us thrown in there, kind of. It's intoxicating.
Handling wads of cash enabled Richard Marinick to afford another intoxication, cocaine. Fired by coke-fueled dreams and schemes, he and other boyos began to hold up armored cars. But his best friend died in a shootout with police. Richard Marinick escaped with his life and decided to try to make a new one. He went into a drug detox center.
I came out, I was sober. And I tried to go straight. I worked for a year. My father said, I don't care what you do, just get a job and work. I sold magazines door to door. I worked for this pest control company. I was a licensed termite exterminator. 6 months before, I'm rolling in dough, now I'm chasing wood-chomping insects through people's basement for like 50 cents an hour. It was crazy. I said, I can't do this. My friend's going, put the shovel down, put the bug spray down. Come with us. We're going to make some money. I put the shovel and the bug spray down, and 2 weeks later, I had 18 grand in my pocket. Now I'm on a roll. Now we're moving again, moving and grooving. We figured one more score.
His last. In 1986, Richard Marinick and his crew were arrested in a high-speed car chase after robbing a bank in Williamstown, Massachusetts. To kill time in Norfolk Prison, Richard Marinick enrolled in a Boston University prison education program and began to write again. He says writing's always been a part of his life, even when he was breaking legs or plotting bank heists.
In between scores, I wrote children's stories. He'd have downtime, and in the warmer months, I'd be down M Street Beach, which is in Boston Harbor, and I'd sit beneath this particular tree, and I'd write these children's stories. People said, why didn't you write about crime? I said, because I was a gangster. I didn't want to write about crime. And it's anything I wrote, it could have been used against me. I needed something that would help ground me, I think. So I wrote the children's stuff, and it's... Yeah.
Trying to imagine a children's crime story, you know, the three little bears
with guns,
clubbing
the three little pigs. I don't know. Some of the stuff was good, you know.
Richard Marinick has been scribbling away on some children's stories that he'd like to write. He also works as a teamster, is married, and he's quite forthright about saying he's getting counseling. He says he doesn't need what he calls the flash anymore of hot cars and large wads of bills in his pockets. He wants to write. His publisher would like a sequel to Boyo's, but Mr. Marinick doesn't want to write one just yet. He's taking some of the characters who survive Boyo's and putting them into a detective story, in which their felonious talents will be applied to solving crimes. Mr. Marinick is trying a little of that himself by speaking with inmates at a Massachusetts prison who are about to come out. He warns them that old friends will try to drag them back into crime. He speaks from experience.
Do you stay in touch with your old friends?
The ones that are still alive, I do. The ones that are in prison, some of them I do, some of them I don't.
What's the difference between do and don't?
It's tough. You know, there are people, Scott, that I would like to stay more in touch with, but by the same token, I can't really be hanging around with these guys anymore, especially if they're active. And if they're active, it's a heat wave. I don't need that type of heat in my life anymore. A bunch of these boyos showed up at my first book signing party at Kate's Mystery Bookstore in Cambridge. These are my pals, and... Yeah. They come walking in and with their leather coats and pinstripe suits, and it was like the Red Sea parting when they walked through the crowd. Everyone's just like the power of the aura. Like, everyone just stepped back. And they're very nice. They're polite. They're gentlemen. They came in and we had a group picture. Mm-hmm. And I didn't even have to instruct them not to duck your head when the flash bulb went off, you know. I said, now everyone's got to look at the camera. I'm looking at you. You're looking at it. So everybody was. And funny, Kate Mattis, the owner of Kate's Mystery Book Store, she said, they all bought two or three books. She said... And they all had $100 bills. He said, I've never seen so many $100 bills in my life. You know?
Richard Marinick at Mel's Diner in South Boston. His new book, a novel, is called Boyos. This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Scott Simon.